to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head-on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, here we are. Good evening and welcome to March 2020 right here in beautiful live Houston, Texas. And just want to welcome you into the program tonight. We're just going to have a great time this evening. I appreciate you just spending some time and curling up with a nice notepad and a cup of coffee or soda and a snack and just sit back and relax. We're going to give you some things that you can jot down and hopefully use sometime throughout the week, or maybe with somebody that you're dealing with, somebody that you run across that may need to hear some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about tonight. It's been a great week. I just want to let you know and want to welcome all the people from the Girls Elevated event that's going to be listening in tonight. I was with them yesterday at downtown Houston, and we had a wonderful event there talking about signs and symptoms of how to recognize if your child is being sexually abused, and some things, training for some parents and kids alike. And it was just a great time. So hopefully we have some new listeners tonight. And it was just great to meet them. And that was a Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital sponsored event. And I just had a wonderful time there at the Girls Elevated. And that was at the United Way downtown Houston. Next week on our program, we're going to have an awesome program. Joe and Darty Hendershot, and they are the founders and CEOs of the Wounded Child conference that I'm going to be speaking at in June. And Joe and Darty will be our guests next week. And Joe is an awesome speaker, and him and his wife are just going to share their hearts of hope for the wounded child and how to deal with that. And their different kind of mission that they do in Ohio, and it's a national conference, but that's going to be wonderful. They will be here next Sunday night. And in the next few weeks after that, we have Adam Lanningham that's going to be here. We have Paul Sears that's going to be here. We have some wonderful guests coming up in the next few weeks. So stay tuned with us. And, you know, we're running on 7 months of this program. So this is our 7th month anniversary. So we've been up and running and things are going well. And I just love being with you every Sunday evening live. And tonight I'd like to encourage you, if you want to, if you have a comment or a question, to call in at 888-627-6008. And the best radio producer in the country, Douglas, will be answering the phone, and he will be able to be friendly to you and patch you in to us and the guests that we have this evening, and would love to hear your comment and question. I always wanted to like to start off with just a little tidbit or two. And as we're starting a new month and kind of a new season, things are kind of popping up and new things to start, new things to do or whatever. But I just want to throw out a couple things that I would like to encourage you to start doing right now for yourself. So you may want to jot these down so you can remember. But first thing I really want you to start doing right now, or at least think about doing this for yourself, is start spending time with the right people. Now, these are the people that you enjoy, you love, you appreciate, and encourage you to be healthy in your way. They're the ones that make you feel more alive and not only embrace who you are now, but they also unconditionally embrace and embody who you want to be in the future. I know you heard the old line that if you run with the dogs, you get the fleas. I want to guarantee you that is still true in March 2020. You can't run around with the wrong people and expect to become what you want to be and what you hope to be and inspire to be. Another thing, start facing your problems head on. How many times are we just going to keep pushing it underneath the rug? How many times we're not going to deal with it? I think our guest tonight and myself, too, have pushed problems off to the side over the years. And there's nothing more refreshing, nothing more invigorating than handling a problem head on. It isn't your problems that define you, but it's how you react to them and recover from them. Another thing. Think about starting this. Start being honest with yourself. Now huddle up here. About everything. Be honest about what's right as well as what's not so right in your life that needs to be changed. To just pretend it's not there, to just masquerade like everything's fine, and ignore the issue, and the issue is so evident, start being honest with yourself about everything, and it's going to help you out. A couple more. How about start making your own happiness a priority? You know, I'll go into work tomorrow, and I'll try to make my bosses there at Baylor College of Medicine as happy as all get out. I want to make sure I leave when they go, hey, there goes a good worker. What about me? What about spending time making myself happy? Your needs matter. If you don't value yourself, look out for yourself, and stick up for yourself, I want to let you know you're sabotaging yourself. So start making your own happiness a priority. How about start forgiving yourself? Start that right now. Start trying to forgive other people. We've all been hurt by our own decisions. We've all been hurt by the decisions of other people. And while the pain of those experiences is normal, sometimes it lingers on way too long. We relive that pain over and over and over and have a hard time letting go. So forgive yourself for all the bad stuff. All the bad decisions you made, for the times you lacked understanding, for the times that you doubted, for the choices that hurt yourself and other people. Forgive others for being the same way too. And these are all vital lessons. And what matters right now is your willingness to learn and to grow from them. And one more. I did this with the parents yesterday. And I love this, and I have a 2-hour workshop just on this one thought. I'm going to give it to you real quick and real free right here. Start listening to that inner voice that you have inside of you. If it helps, discuss the ideas that are closest to the people that's closest to you, but give yourself enough room to follow your own inner voice. Be true to yourself. Say what you need to say to yourself, but do what you know in your heart is right. Had parent after parent after parent. And I was just telling the crowd yesterday at the conference that had a lady call me from Australia the other day. And she said, you know, I knew that I shouldn't have let my daughter go that weekend. And that was the weekend that her daughter got abused. She had that gut feeling inside of her. She knew she wasn't to do that, and she bypassed that parent intuition. She bypassed that heart, that spiritual guide that our Creator has put inside of us to regulate us. So when that alarm goes off, react to it. Don't ignore it. Don't put it on mute. When it goes off, you stop and go, wait, there's a reason my gut is feeling wrong right now, and act on that. Just a few things I wanted to start off with. And we're going to have a wonderful show tonight. Call in 888-627-6008. We have Brandon Dempsey. Brandon is here for part two of his life story, but it's going to take part three and four, I think, by the time we get through this. But Brandon is the founder and CEO of worshipteamtraining.com and Worship Team Training University, and has over 20 years of leading worship and training worship theology and music and songwriting for churches, ranging from 500 members to 5,000 members. He's had the opportunity to study and train with Maranatha Music, as well as some of the most awesome churches in the country, including Coast Hill Church, Saddleback Church, where Rick Warren is the pastor. And he is also a devotional writer for Bible.com and YouVersion, and also with Faith Life. To be honest with you, though, the most important thing on his resume for me is he's a friend of mine. And I don't have many. So, Brandon, I want to just welcome you to the program. Are you there?
I'm here, Greg. Thank you so much for having me back once again.
Well, it's great to have you. Just welcome back to the program, and I hope you got your snack in you and your belly's full, and we're just ready to sit back and talk, and I'm ready to pull out my ice pick and pick inside of that brain of yours and of the experiences that you've had. So are you ready? There's not going to be any...
I hope it's a rubber pick.
No anesthesia tonight. Let's just go for the pain.
No.
You know, Brandon, if the folks, because we have a lot of new listeners tonight in the last couple weeks, probably that may have not caught the first show, and I know I don't want to spend the next 40 minutes on it, but can you recap just real quickly, in a nutshell, what's happened to you, your life story real quickly as a child, and then I want to get into the second part of this, is how you made it through and how you're making it now, okay?
Sure.
Thank you, Brandon.
My parents divorced when I was five, and within the next year, I was sexually abused from the years of 6 through 17. And my parents, mainly my dad's neglect of the situation and reality of my abuse, is what prevented me from not only moving forward, but living a hidden life and living a life that I had regretted and found myself into deep depression. And it's only been recent, within the past year and a half, 2 years, that I've actively been dealing with all this, and just really for the first time here coming on your show, speaking about it in mass of people of your audience, and to which I'm grateful. It's been a very hard road, because for one to tell their story, it doesn't matter how long or how short it's been, for anyone to tell their story is a very painful and difficult process. And that's something that I had to seek help in order to do that, which we will talk about coming up. But being in life of music and being in life of the church, it doesn't really matter what environment that you're in, because when you're damaged, that affects everything. And I know for some people, they may look at me and they say, yeah, but Brandon, you were in the church and you had God for help and you had this kind of care. Not necessarily, because again, when you're really damaged, it doesn't matter where you are. If you don't want to let people in and you just want to lock up, that will be your reality forever. And that will, for me, it turned out to be the most painful thing besides the abuse, was not having the willingness. I had the ability, but I had to learn a lot of tools to get there too, and that was difficult. But having that first willingness was, for me, was a vapor at first. I had to understand what all the realities were that I had suppressed for all these years. Yeah. So in a nutshell, and that's me.
Okay. Did you find, and do you find still, that during those years of silence, those years of dormancy, with you just kind of balling up or ignoring it there, like you and I both have done, did you find yourself always willing to help other people?
Well, I did, because it,
in
a weird way, I felt better about myself. If I could, even though I felt horrible with myself, in some way I felt like, you know, if I could help others with doing things here in the church or doing things with music, if I could somehow provide that source, then that will maybe, would it help eliminate some of my pain away? Would it get me distracted? And sure enough, it got me distracted, because for most people who know me and what we do at Worship Team Training, we put out a lot of content throughout the week. And we were, at that time, just a few years ago, I was really trying to be heavy into my field of help for others in the church and outside the church. And I thought, you know, if I could just pour my time into this and I can just become preoccupied with that, then I don't have to look at my pain so much, because it's easier, right, to maybe help somebody else, because, you know, their pain is not as bad as mine, or, man, their pain is worse than mine. And sometimes we can use that as another attempt to distance the true healing that we really need. And so for a long time, I poured a lot of effort and identity into my job, into my career, to my calling, into what I did in the church, and thought, you know, I'm doing this now. And in a way, I kind of felt untouchable for my own pain. And that was a big mistake.
And it starts all it festering. Did was,
it did. And it, you know, it just did not do anything good for those that I loved and those who loved me. And it, you know, I had to come to grips with that.
Do you find, Brandon, I know in my own personal walk, that when I did that, of course, you know, I'm in the same kind of field. I would always help other people and give them the right answers. It was amazing. But I never took my own medicine. You know, I always said, well, you have to do this. You have to be honest about this. You have to do this. You have to repair that relationship. And I go down the list. But then I would never look in the mirror and say those things to me and listen. So I just kind of played the game. Hopefully that it would go away. And we all know better than that.
And see, that's another lie that we live under. And it's just that falsity that we put up for ourselves that keeps us from dealing with mainly what it is, our own trauma. And so that trauma kept trying to surface itself because I wasn't doing anything. But then you have to work harder to suppress it, much like you do with anything else that damages you. You have to, if you don't want it to come to light, you got two big engines that are working, the lie that you have to cover up to keep it down, and then the actual event that happened that really hurt you.
And so
for me, it did. I felt like a failure. And especially when, you know, this started out small. I mean, look, when this all happened, when I was six and going through junior high and high school and college, I didn't know anybody. Nobody knew me. I just, my friends and family. But, you know, when I started to become a little bit experienced in those that I was working with and going across the country and doing a lot of things. And at that time, when things started building up, traveling dates, and I was traveling about 35 dates a year, and then all of a sudden we have like a radio network that explodes, and then we have our video that explodes, and we had a video show on Facebook Live that I did every day, and every day we had about 3,000 viewers daily. and we had about 30,000 coming to the sites every week. And it was just this push and push and content. And all it did was just kept, it just kept reinsulating. I kept reinsulating my own pain of pushing it down because I thought, well, look how, you know, great this is and just riding on this high. But all it did is it made me work even harder is what it did. And it made me more miserable. And so it just kept going in this negative cycle. It kept going into the, just this bad spin that I could not get out of. And then when I was able to finally break through it and I just had enough because it just took a toll on me emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And just to the point where I was so depressed and so anxious ridden and severe depression, I just could not keep the plate spinning. It was just too much. And then I felt when I broke through and started dealing with it actively, like what you said, no longer pushing it under the rug.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then I felt like the biggest failure to all the people who knew me, to all the people who had seen me and what the things that I've done. And then I had to come to grips with that, you know what? I was powerless over my abuse. That abuse... That picked me. I didn't pick it. And I think there's also a lot of freedom in saying that. And that's what helped me the most is just identifying that, you know what? I didn't choose that. Yeah. I was doing fine. There was nothing that forced me to do something that I just woke up one day and had to have this happen. It chose me. And it was out of my control, which made it my fault. So even coming to that reality, though, takes, you know, it takes heavy layers off, but heavy layers that you have to work through to get to that point.
And that's what we're going to talk about. When we get back from the other side of this break, how do you deal with trauma in such a way that it's like an emotional concrete baseball bat being hit in your stomach emotionally? How do you overcome that kind of trauma that you have masked and hid for years? And we're going to talk about that when we come back, just on the other side of this break. Hang with us.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, and welcome back to Breaking the Silence. We just have an awesome guest tonight, Brandon Dempsey from Austin, Texas, and just a wonderful friend. And we're going to be doing a lot of things together, I think, for the rest of our lives, and going to be doing some things with conferences and trying to reach people and touch people. And we was talking about, Brandon, the trauma, that you didn't pick it, it picked you. It wasn't your fault, but now how do you deal with the emotion that has hit you that you finally admitted, I was abused? How do you deal with that kind of trauma, Brandon?
Well, after admitting it and verbalizing it, I had to get help, in which I sought therapy. I think that, I know that You have a lot of great therapists and doctors that come on your show. And I listened to a couple of them just recently. And, you know, it's difficult as it is just to look into the mirror and just to even ask the question, why me? And why did this happen? And those are answers that we can't really answer ourselves. And it's only through the help of professionals that can really move you to point A to point B. So for me, I heard a wonderful doctor who talked about shame, and he's a new friend of mine. His name is Dr. Don Leachy. He's up in Akron, Ohio, great man. And he talked about shame and what it does to a child, what it does growing up and framing their first years of through 3 through 5, and how it forms their sense of judgment and the way that they view the world. And then ages from 5 through 9, how the spiritual impacts take over. So for me, I was just having my world was already framed yet broken from the divorce. And then I had the spiritual kick in after 5 and 6 when I realized that, well, I knew that there is God, but I really didn't know God as a child, and yet everything was already being broken around me. So shame was the first, and I think for most of us feel that too. That for me, it was the first emotion that I felt was the shame of not just divorce, but the shame of what I felt that I had done, the responsibility that I put on myself. Mm-hmm. And you know, why do we put those emotions on ourselves? Why are children put themselves in that position? And I think that it can start out like this. I think that it can start out by the child is groomed at first not to get in trouble. This is not saying anything bad about parenting, so please don't get me wrong. But from a right. child's perspective, they want to please. It's a very innate thought process to please the parent in a way that you want to. You want their validation.
Sure.
And so children avoid those kind of things that will not get them in trouble. They, at the same time, children are also they're not allowed to have boundaries, at least that they're not maybe, and I'm not speaking with every child, but most children are not taught boundaries until maybe later on in life. And they're used to always being told no and to not speak out. And that was me. My parents did not give me boundaries. They did not give me, even at a young age, they did not give me the tool to say no when I saw something that was wrong or something that was disgusting or something that I should not have seen. And children, you know, they continue to become victimized by their predators when the child is not aware that they have a choice. Mm-hmm. And when they feel like when the choice is out the window, they don't resort to anything else. So when they get older, they struggle against good moral values. They really struggle until they come into a level of emotional dysfunction. And they try certain things, substances, lifestyles to self-medicate their abuse and trauma. But unfortunately, it never goes away. It only worsens over time where it becomes unbearable. And that was me. I could not continue the way that I was, but I felt so ashamed and so hurt, but mm-hmm. I felt like I ran out of straw. So when the trauma catches up with you in life, where it's overwhelming, Greg, you know this, it affects your health, your behavior, your outlook. It leaves a person in a position where it's unspeakable and painful, and yet the reality you suppress is undeniable. And then they seek out a therapist to their specific needs to help do the trauma work. And this was my process.
Yeah. And you know, and in each person's life, Brandon, I think as you talk about choosing different things, mm-hmm. substances and lifestyles and the own shame and guilt that you put on, and people do all kinds of different things to get past mm-hmm. what they're dealing with. And it could vary from one extreme to the other. And then when you pile that on top of your already your shame and your guilt, you're thinking, what kind of person am I? Because you've made wrong choices. And I know I did that. And it ends up affecting, and I'm not for sure it has in yours, but you can share. It ends up affecting every relationship I was ever in.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
From friends. Yeah.
Because what I learned was that as I continued to work through that process of the good and the bad, the common denominator was me going through all of the pain and going through all those different trying to work the relationships and trying to make things my way and suppress things. I had to realize that I think that was the hardest thing, was to let go of the pride and let go of that power. I didn't need to have that power to keep up the game. And that was the hardest thing, because for 40 years I tried having my own, keeping the power to myself. No one has to know. And that is a lie that just comes down from the pit. And
Did you find that your work helping other people, keep them busy, being successful, was a way to convince yourself that you're okay?
Well, as I said, beginning of the program, yes, it did. Mm-hmm. But yet I also knew that I was lying.
Absolutely.
I was lying to myself, because I knew that wasn't the real me. I wasn't doing it for the right reasons. I was doing it for the deflection. I was I was displacing my own hurt. And, you know, but as I worked through it, when I was getting help, there was still a level of mistrust that I had with myself that I had to work through. And even before I got help with therapy, I had to be brought down to the bottom in order to reach out, where I had to realize that, you know, it's humility and the fear and the abuse and the grieving and the permission that I needed to grieve. And that's a big one too. That needed to come out. But it was always the fear of, but what would people think? And would my life be ruined if I spoke? And I realized that, you know, when I was starting to get help, it hurt really bad to try to go there. But I realized that, man, once I started to verbalize what happened at such a young age, and the therapist had such a great environment that made it safe, that made it open, and trust was present, I felt like I could just be a little bit more vulnerable, a little bit more transparent, at time, just a little bit at a time. And the more that started happening, I realized I started moving forward. And then it got to a place where I wanted to talk about it. Now, don't get me wrong, because this was not just peachy for me. This was not, I'm just starting to tell my story and now I'm feeling better. And it wasn't that way. I was actually feeling worse.
Right.
I had worse, but it's like a wound. A good friend of mine, Dennis Jarnigan, talked a lot about how when he was wounded, he had to let that wound bleed. And it really is the concept of it gets worse before it gets better. And you have to develop some baseline of patience. And you have to let that wound bleed, because that wound has to get all the junk out. It has to get all the hurt out and all the ugliness. And that's the way I felt. I could not, it felt worse for me to keep all that pus and junk inside rather than to let it out. And though I didn't know how to let it out, that's okay. I started to gain a little bit of knowledge better each time I did it. But when you have a professional person and therapist who creates that safety for you, then you have the ability to speak a little bit more. And I had a specific treatment plan, and others were brought into that treatment team, various professionals to help me in my trauma and recovery. So, it's not the issue of what the substance of choice was. The problem of self-medication, which alters your behavior, your choice making, that it, for me, it just further suppressed my pain that needed to be dealt with also. So you have to look at the things that you're running to self-medicate and what's caused you the trauma at the same time. And so for me, again, I had to give myself permission to grieve my own abuse. Yeah. And I think that was because you're not taught that. You're not taught to feel bad about it. You're taught to feel bad that because I think we feel better for some psyche reason when we put the blame on ourselves, because it somehow prevents us from dealing with the actual grief that needs to come out. And yeah. then through the help of therapy, when I was able to grieve, I was also learning how then to later, not up front, but later forgive and learn to forgive as a process, both my abusers and my enablers. And then, you know, like you said, you have to listen. You said this on the upfront of the show, listen to the voice. Mm-hmm. And I knew that our Creator was wanting me to be true to myself and not be anything different.
Yeah. If somebody was listening tonight that is in the place in their life, because I think we have a lot of people that are listening live right now that haven't told anybody yet, they're still dealing with it, and they're doing whatever kind of what you call self-medication. They're doing something in their life that supposedly helps them get by, but in reality is adding more concrete to their boots and taking them down to the bottom of the ocean, and you're going to end up drowning. What would you say to the person if they're in that mode of saying, well, I'm just trying to get past the pain by doing this, and I know it's not right? How do you get over that hump, Brandon, if they called in right now and ask you that?
I would say that when those of us are hurting, when people are hurting, and when we try to find an answer, we look in the wrong places. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking for comfort in all the wrong safety, you have comfort in all the wrong places.
And so you're not cleaning out the wound, you're putting dirt in it.
Yeah, exactly. And see, the deal is that there's two responses, because I think that, again, it's the fear of it's the damage of what happened to us and we had to face it, and then it's the fear of what will people think. And I had to learn how to cross that bridge also about what will people think, what would my own, those that I love and those who love me, what would they think? You know, people are not going to understand having not been through it. And you're going to have those two types of reactions, because I'm telling my story now, and I know that people will look at me, that either they don't believe it or they don't want to hear it. And it's because of, you know, if they don't understand, because people don't understand it, I would say, I'm glad you don't understand it. Yeah. Because you don't want to go through what I went through. But if you did say that you have a predator and you do understand it, I would worry about you.
Mm-hmm. How much do you think being a man adds to our pain compared to I know trauma is trauma, but when I at the beginning telling people about very personal stuff, you wonder about your own manhood.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's a known and I want to, I'm being very sensitive to everyone here that's listening, that I can speak from my own experience that as a man, my father taught me, because my dad neglected me and taught me in another way how to neglect my own feelings. That was it. So you're a man, you're a boy, you don't talk about those things. And that's in the era that we grew up, that was very prevalent. And that's why you had the reactions of, well, that person's just weird. Well, that's really what they just don't understand, because they don't have a clue about it, what it comes down to. And, you know, in general, how the world reacts to victims of abuse, people base their conclusions on myths that they've heard other people speak of. And the most common myth about those who react to individuals who have been abused, they think that just because they were abused and traumatized as a child, now they're traumatizing other children. But that's not really what's going on. Those who abuse, the reason why predators traumatize other children is because they were hurt in the same way. And in response of the one who was abused, like myself, we become hypervigilant. In other words, you know, we would do anything to keep our children safe from other predators.
Absolutely.
And we become this very high reactive and high proactive, because you never had the thought of, well, let's see who else I can hurt. Because you already know the depth of your own hurt. It's wrong. It hurt me. It hurt others. I don't want it. And that's the way that I felt. But today, people pass it forward. You had a guest on 2-3 weeks ago that said passing down the pain, and that was such a good way to put it, because the predators are the ones who, you know, they get the arousal from their proteges, and it's a learned behavior. But when you're not groomed to hurt somebody, you know how much it hurts. And then, therefore, you're going to speak out because you care for the weak and hurting, because you want to protect. And that was me, my pain. I did not receive the protection that I needed from my parents, from my dad. So today, I want to help others. I want to help my family, my friends, my church, as many people as I can to get my story out. And that's why I'm telling, because this is part of the trauma effect that works on you, because now you still, you know, you carry that fear of, because you know of what somebody can do, but you know how much damaging it can be when other people are not protected from it.
Yeah, that is so good. And we're going to, on the other side of this break, we're going to talk about how we can help, how therapy helps, how we can, you know, get out and other people can help other people that have been in this, and some of the things that helped us. And we're going to talk about that just on the other side. Don't turn your dial. Stay with us for the last segment of Breaking the Silence. We'll be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back, and it's hard to believe that 45 minutes have already passed. And this show literally, at least in my book, literally flies by. And we want you to join in. If there's something that's been said, if Brandon plucked a heartstring and you have a question or just a thought, 888-627-6008. We would love to hear from you tonight. And Douglas is sitting right there on the phones waiting for him to vibrate. And all you have to do is give him a call at 888-627-6008, and we will patch you in. So, Brandon, let's talk about that nasty word in some people's language, but it's called therapy. Does it work?
Yes.
Yes,
it works. And the misconception is I don't need the help. And
yeah.
It's, you know, it's, I'll say this at the end, but I would say that right now, therapy for what it did for me, it provided explanation. It provided the answer of why do I feel this way?
Yeah.
That was the toughest for me. And I think that when you have an understanding of why, then you have a good response to know what to do with it and how to answer the why. There's no magic pill. And for me, there's no magic session to make things rosy. I know we live in this day and age where we just want a quick fix, but therapy is not a quick fix, because if you do go, if you go through it quick, you really didn't fix anything.
Right.
It's really about everything who you are, your mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. And trauma has a greater impact on these areas. And trauma also doesn't ask for forgiveness. It just comes. It doesn't have any favoritism either. And this is why it takes so long to heal and recover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that, you know, you can have, it's like this, you can have cognitive memories, physical memories, or emotional memories that make you feel a certain way, but you can't understand why until you connect the dots emotionally. And for me, go ahead.
No, keep going.
Well, for me, it was learning how to reach down and dig up the stuff that didn't want to be found. And I think that's what I meant by suppressing earlier is that's what we do. We just bury it. You know, we're taught that, sorry, but growing up, we were taught that in the church, you know, well, you don't want to talk about these things because we shouldn't be doing these things anyway. But you have to bring things to the light, and you have to look at all those areas in full disclosure and see them for what they are. All the things in your life that you covered, hid, or what you've lied. And I'll say I just want to encourage those right now listening that maybe they've had somebody in their life that told them that it wasn't worth bringing up. It could have been somebody in the church that turned them off to God. It could have been somebody in their school or in their work that said it wasn't important. My dad, as I mentioned in my last session with you on the radio, I mentioned that my dad was the one who minimized me and neglected me and told me that my pain didn't exist. And this is what's hard. That's the hard truth, is uncovering all that hurt in your life. And that is the hard, I think for me, on this side of heaven, that was the hardest thing that I can ever do in life. And I think that, you know, it's always important to learn to try to sweep in the corners to get everything out. And again, it's one step at a time. And at any level of unresolved trauma, the problem is that it will keep you where you've always been, because they're trigger points.
Oh, and you know, this afternoon, I have to be honest, I had a bad afternoon, and I don't know why.
Yeah.
I came home and I'm just sitting and though, you know, the therapy's been there, the resolve has been there, and I know there's hope down the road, and I'll end the program here in a minute saying there's always hope. But every now and then, and I know you have to feel this way too, and I'd love to hear how you deal with it, but I feel like, and I talk about this in the next book that's coming out, I feel like I'm drowning in the absence of water. And I know that doesn't make sense, but you're sitting in a room by yourself and you can't catch your breath. And something triggered that, and I had to process myself through it. And it didn't take 10 minutes. It took hours. And finally, I made it through it. But how do you deal when a trigger is pulled and you immediately go from a high to a brick wall? Boom, you hit it.
I love this. Okay, so my therapist taught me really well, Obi-Wan. He said that at that point, you have to look at the what is and not the what if. Mm. You have to look at the what is and the reality and say, okay, this is what I know. This is what's happening. I am feeling stressed. I am feeling anxious. Why is this? Okay, I have this is going on in my life. I have this happening in my life. It's a lot better that way instead of the what ifing, because the ifing only does more damage. And I'm reminded of that often, even to this current day. And I'm also reminded by another truth of just use what you know, because I think that's the thing. I have to sit when I have a trigger. I have to think real quick. Okay, what's happening right now? And we're not always good at this. I mean, I know this must sound like a method or an instruction manual. There is no manual, but I've learned this over years. So now it's like I can think of, okay, what's happening in my life right now? What's causing this trigger? Why am I feeling so emotional? And one thing I've learned in therapy was that the body remembers trauma. Mm-hmm. And these stresses are real important, and they should never be ignored. You know, the effects of trauma, it induces an expression of physical grieving. Mm-hmm. And it causes physical and literal, I mean, gut-wrenching pain, so intense that it causes people to bend over. When, you know, when people say that stress hits your stomach first, that's exactly what happens. And so your body may remember something that you're triggered now of something. Let's say you're walking down the road and you see a little dog, and maybe they're wearing a red collar. Just seeing that image could trigger something all the way back 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Oh,
and all
of
a sudden, you have this onset of, I can't breathe. I feel like I'm going to fall. You may even want to cry. And it's because something happened way back long ago that a color, an association, a memory was happened because it happened to you physically and your body remembers it. And then when you see that trigger years and years later, it's your body is recalling that event unannounced, because just the way that your brain files and stores information, and sometimes it's quickly accessible, sometimes it's not. But
yeah, you know, I pulled up my piano bench and turned the piano on, and I have a piano here in the penthouse, and I'm sure my neighbors don't appreciate it, but I just crank it up and I just beat on that piano. And that eventually, and it's kind of funny, the song that I always end up singing is, you know, this is the air I breathe, you know, and I just keep singing that over and over until that tension kind of just fades away, and I have to bring myself to, but if I don't do that, I will literally find myself in a fetal position on certain days of like, okay, what's happening? And
what I learned is that you have to do something physical. And if it's playing music, if it's taking a walk, if it's, you know, pet therapy is the best therapy. And, you know, when you have one right at home. And I think there's three valuable things I've learned is rest, exercise, and diet. And I talk about this to people that I work with in music and in the church that, you know, you have to get rest. You have to have a good number of hours of sleep. And I know that's hard for a lot of folks, but that feeds into your your diet, what you eat. Are you eating, you know, and I don't mean diet meaning that you're trying to be on a diet. I mean, like, what kind of foods are you eating? But are you eating throughout the day? Are you eating
right.
to help minimize the anxiety? Because, you know, your body will try to process things. If you don't have anything there in your stomach, well, that starts the stomach pain because you have nothing there metabolizing. Your brain works better when you metabolize. Like when you're studying for a test, you remember back in high school, they told you to eat a candy bar or carbohydrates before a test or before the next day, and it helps you think. It really does. And then the exercise plays into that. Go for a walk. Go to the gym. Go for a bike ride. When you have good rest, I mean, a good exercise, then that feeds into having good rest. And so, no, it's, again, these are not magic bullets either, but they are bullets in your chamber that you can use. They're just tools that you can use along the way. And like when I get anxious, you know, I get asked, you know, okay, when's the last time that I've had lunch? You know, when did I last eat? It doesn't mean I need to go out and eat a big buffet. I just need maybe an apple or a granola bar. Or maybe yeah. I need to get out and walk around the office, you know, just to get some fresh air. But you have to do things physically to force yourself to get out of that. Because if you don't, it will wreck you. But it's also calling a trusted friend who's safe and just say, hey, can I just bounce this off you? Because, man, I'm feeling some really bad triggers here. I don't know where they're coming from. Can I just talk for 5 minutes? That does wonders if you have a safe friend that you can trust. But and that's in the event that, you know, you can't speak to your therapist, or maybe if you're on the road right now and you're trying to seek one out and you're at the very beginning. But these are things that I still use today.
That's great. I tell you what, Brandon, the hour's about gone. I just, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for, first of all, for being my friend and for coming on and sharing your story with the world. And I really truly believe from the bottom of my heart that we're going to touch a lot of people, and a lot of people's lives are going to be changed because of your authenticity and genuineness and fresh approach of just telling it like it is. And there's going to be people lined up waiting to talk to you after you speak, of saying, hey, can I have a couple minutes of your time? And it's going to make a world of difference. I appreciate it. If people want to get in touch with you, Brandon, the best way for them to reach out to you, just to say hi or to ask you a question?
Yeah, the best way, I'll give you two things. My email is brandon@brandondempsey.com. That'd be the most memorable. That's B-R-A-N-O-N is how you spell my name, @brandondempsey.com. And then my cell phone is 281-734-3688. So if you feel like you need to talk, then please call me or text me.
Okay, here we go. Yeah, I do that too, Brandon. I tell you what, it rings off the hook some days, but that's okay. That's what we're here for. Every time I talk to somebody, I end up learning something, and it is therapy for me. Any last thoughts, Brandon, before we close out? What you got?
Yeah, let me just say this for those of you that are, you know, looking for therapy maybe for the first time, or maybe it's been years, or maybe you're still in the middle of it. You know, it's like a child falling off their bike. They scrape their knee. You as the adult, you want to run over to help them. And the first reaction is that they look at you and they say no. And it's that fear coming from the child of being hurt. They don't want to be hurt again, even from those who they know that want to help. It defies logic, but you are wanting to help heal it, but put medicine on it, put a band-aid on it to make it better, to heal. But the child doesn't see anything else but their pain. And sometimes you have to help the child move their hands and to uncover the wound. You're not ripping the wound open, but you're being gentle, tender, and compassionate. You're encouraging them to reveal the wound. That's what therapy does for a person. Then you can assess the damage and set on a good path for healing.
That's fantastic. Brandon, we are completely out of time. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. And we want to just welcome everybody back and for being with us this evening and join us next week. We always want to remind you that no matter what you're going through, there's always hope. Always. God bless you. Have an awesome week. We'll love to have you join us next week right here for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.